What's the difference between DIY and doing it yourself? It's the difference between a part-time passion and a full-time business. Wix gives you the power to turn your passion into a moneymaker with a website that fits your unique vision and the business tools you need to succeed. Let your ideas flow with AI that guides you but keeps you in the driver's seat. Manage your business from one dashboard and keep it growing with built-in marketing features. It's time to turn your daydream into your dream job. Do it yourself. Go to Wix.com.
Got an amazing business idea, but haven't locked in a domain name? Search Wix domains and claim yours before someone else snags it. Your ideal.com, .net, .u is out there. Search Wix domains and set your brand in motion.
Yeah! There it is! When that robot voice comes in, you know it is time to begin! And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to
ELC.
Woo! Especially if you're one of our geeks and sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're just trying to make it through the day. Maybe you're sitting in traffic. Maybe you're just getting that last errand done and you need somebody to be with you on the journey. Well, we're going to do it. We're going to be in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. Those fine folks are bringing this show to you. Their generosity, their support means we get to keep making the show, and boy, are we grateful. In exchange, they get some cool perks, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and a whole bunch of bonus content. You got Feeling This, the show with Christian Spicer and Alex Solman talking about the feelings behind video games. Multiple seasons available just for patrons. You got extra chats with developers. You got the Wednesday paid DLC program where Lana Bashinsky joins us to talk about all the stuff the patrons are into. Super fun, always wacky, a little silly, always fun. And it's all just for the patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. You can become one by heading over there. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games. And there are many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata. That's spelled with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis. The guy who's still got a mustache, still rocking it. We were just talking about it. Christian Spicer, I envy that mustache. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Hello, Jeff. Hello, everyone. As you were doing your wonderful intro, Jeff, and if you're geeks and sneaks, or if you're on your commute, or trying to get through the day, I want to add one other group of people to that.
Only one?
As we are recording a little early this week than our normal time. So if you are a video game developer or publisher waiting for us to finish recording this episode to then announce big news, welcome to the show. I wanted also to make sure that they... that they were welcome to drop that, you know, that big news drip right after we finish the show.
Perhaps
I don't want to tease a guest, Jeff. I would never.
Hey, we have an awesome show for you, folks. We have a bunch of really interesting games to talk about. Some news, not all of it negative, but most of it negative. But the good news is we have an awesome guest to do it with. You know the DLC always stands for Downloadable Kanata and your Downloadable Christian. But this week, I'm so excited because once again, DLC stands for Detonating Large Combustibles. Because we have senior video producer at Giant Bomb, our friend Jan Ochoa, back with us. Hey, Jan, how are you?
I should have skipped this morning cup of coffee, Jeff. I forget how juiced I get after listening to your intro. The two cups of coffee, forget it. I just need to listen to you beam into my ears and I'll feel energized for a week.
Well, I'm happy to provide the service, your caffeine substitute. Love having you here. So excited to chat with you. It looks like you're ready to pilot some sort of boat.
Yes, I've decided 2025 is year of the fisherman, whether or not you enjoy fish or the activity of fishing, let's just throw on our fisherman beanies, some wool sweaters, and some boots, and we're good to go.
You are ready to rock.
Patrons can see the video version of this. I will just say you look fantastic, and you envy the mustache, Jeff. I envy layers. I love layers.
Yeah.
And in LA, there's like 2 weeks of like you can reasonably wear layers, and every other time you're just cosplaying as someone who lives somewhere not in LA.
Your third layer is sweat.
Yes. It is freezing temperatures here in the Bay Area. A cold 50 degrees.
Oh.
Well, I'm living it up here in Colorado because we're going to be 65 in the next 2 days. Whoa. It's snow on the ground 2 days ago, 65 tomorrow. Love it.
It's like nudist colony weather where you are, Jeff.
It really is. And that's what I've been trying to convince my wife. Anyway, that was terrible. Let's get into it. Start the show the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Great place to send comments, questions, anything you'd like us to know, including stories. We love hearing from you at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You could also visit our Discord, which is 5x5DLC on Discord. Great folks hanging out there talking about stories and video games and all sorts of other stuff. Give it a try, folks. You'll like it. But Jan, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Y'all got a very good selection of stories this week, and I was pondering which is the most important, and I think I might put down multiverses shutting down again.
Yes, we know that multiverses went away, came back last year with a new look and feel, new engine, and this was going to be the second coming of multiverses, and it was going to, you know, a bunch of new characters. Well, found out this week that this is the swan song. Season 5 for multiverses begins February 4th, runs through May 30th. After that, it's all done. They're introducing Aquaman and Lola Bunny from Looney Tunes.
Aquaman is the harbinger for the end of an era at DC.
It does feel like that's the pattern.
Hey, the new. Also, I should say a new Aquaman comic is about to start. So maybe I'm nervous now. All of a sudden,
Aquaman does it again.
Aquaman.
Yeah. So you know, this is. I'm wondering if you feel like this is. Obviously sad news for the developer who's seemingly put a lot of care into trying to make this game, you know, taking multiple swings at it, make this game work. Of course, Multiverses is the WB version of Smash Brothers, for lack of a better term. And it's an odd announcement to say, hey, our new season's starting. It's the last one. Yeah. It's like, get excited, but it's over. So I know we're in this weird place with the video game industry right now where stuff's getting canceled left and right. And, you know, it's hard. You keep your head on a swivel. But I wonder what your take is on this, Jan.
It just seems we've seen a lot of this across the video game industry, as you alluded, Jeff. But there is a lot of mismanagement from the top that it feels like. I remember watching Space Jam 2. And that final scene where there are just nothing but WB characters surrounding the court. And I was just thinking, all right, WB is going to, they're going to have their Ready Player One moment. They're going to stuff everyone into a game, especially with that initial lineup we saw of the roster of multiverses. And that Smash community actually enjoyed the game. And it had everything going for it. There's so many memeable characters. They had Shaggy in it. And it just seems a fumbling of the bag, not only to have to shut it down initially and take it off any type of store, but now to bring it back out and do the same thing a couple months later. It just seems like mismanagement across the board from WB. And it feels like WB is doing that not just in video games, but in other properties as well.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I mean, we've talked a little bit on the show about the movie side and the weird, you know, removal of a number of completed movies that just will never see the light of day. Batgirl, and that I think it was a Tasmanian Devil. Isn't that the one?
Wile E. Coyote versus Acme, or Acme versus
Wile E. Coyote.
Yeah.
But John Cena, that everybody said was great. I mean,
everybody says is amazing. Yeah.
Not going to win an Oscar, but the reports were it was a really, really fun movie.
Yeah. Christian, the monetization model has come under some scrutiny from multiverses. You know, obviously this hasn't turned out to be a money-making venture, or at least not enough for them to continue making it. But I think both of us enjoyed the game. It's really funny, anecdotally, yesterday, out of the total blue, my 8-year-old son said, "Hey, Daddy, can we play that game where you could play as Shaggy?" And I was like, "You're talking about multiverse?" He's like, yeah, that one. We played it. We haven't played it for 6 months. Easy. And out of the blue, I was like, "You know, actually, buddy, the game is going away. We should play it now."
The good news is for you and your son is they are seemingly ending this game the best way possible, where if you play it during season 5, it will create a local save file and you will have access to the game and its versus AI and couch co-op version of the game indefinitely. So it's not concording, you know, which
right
agents have already shown up at my house because I've mentioned the name. You're not allowed. Will Smith is out there with his little neuralizer or whatever it is trying to wipe it from our memory. So I think it's a pretty cool announcement in terms of how the game is going to go away. Jan, I think you make a great point about the management of things. And I always find it fascinating when you hear these stories and the same person who announced the game, you know, at some high level is like, "And this is our bold new strategy. We're going to be doing this. It's going to work out." And then that same person later announces why it doesn't work. And all these other people are going to have to and we'll talk about this more in a minute, find a new home in the industry, or find a new job or a new role. And meanwhile, that person always tries to present themselves as the truth teller, but yet somewhere they were wrong, right? Like somewhere something happened where like whoopsie at the beginning or whoopsie now, but the messaging never feels that way. It always feels like, "Well, I have the best solution. We're going to do this live service platform brawler. Everybody, I have the best solution. We are focusing on only Harry Potter. I have the best solution." I don't know, Jeff. The whole thing feels like a bummer. I do wonder, without knowing the full financial aspect of how much this game costs to make or even self-license all these characters, even though they're all WB-owned, whatever that cross deal looks like between DC and whatever, however they move the pennies around internally on their ledger. If this game would have had more success as a boxed retail copy, a la Smash, because I think this game is very compelling from these are all the characters you have. Here's how it's a couch co-op based game. We're going to have a cool online multiplayer mode, but we have the single player thing. And then I think a lot of kids see this. I was going to say at Target, but they don't have video games anymore. sees this on their digital storefront, and it's super compelling. And seeing it as
scrolling through their Amazon pages as they like to do with mom for back to school, you know,
as their dad shovels the driveway from snow and they go through the shovelware on the Nintendo eShop, sharing in that bond of digging through crap. I think it's a compelling package, right? And I wonder if that would have made more sense if like it's just here, it's a game. And not it's a free-to-play game loaded with these monetization models.
You bring up one of my biggest reactions, which, you know, you two can correct me if I'm wrong, or our listeners can correct me if I'm overlooking something. But it seems to me very counterintuitive that Super Smash Brothers as a franchise would be such a massive hit. I mean, massive, massive hit. And yet every single other game that's tried to do this has failed.
Brawlhalla, there's exceptions. They're not as big as Smash,
I guess. But it, you know, Sony did their Sony All-Stars game years ago. You know, I don't think it's the strength of IP characters that are losing the battle here. I don't understand why this subgenre doesn't have more entrants that are, you know, long-standing in it.
Yeah, I've always been the Smash formula has not been my particular flavor of fighting game.
Yeah, me neither.
But fans of the Smash games will definitely check out a new splinter in like the formula. Rivals of Aether or Aether is like another one that has some decent hype. There was that Nickelodeon game from a couple of years ago,
right?
As well,
yeah.
And some of them have some decent quality of life updates from the normal Smash stuff. But yeah, they, despite the IP, even if it's original or something enticing like WB, Nickelodeon, tapping into the nostalgia, everyone winds up going back to Smash, if not even an older Smash game as well. So I wonder if it's part of how the community is set up, or maybe there is some secret sauce to those older games that people like us that aren't in the scene are in tune with.
Yeah. I mean, I suspect that's true. I suspect, as you point out, I'm not a Super Smash Brothers aficionado. I've never clicked for me, even as a younger person.
That's the problem. You have to click to do your big hit, you know,
yeah,
if you're not.
I don't click. I just run back and forth and die. I don't understand.
You don't click. Yeah,
there's no clicking. Like, you're supposed to push buttons? No, uh-huh, I was always a Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat guy. You know, that was my jam. And so I was like, you can hit, and nothing. I never destroy them. It has to, you know, that's not really true, but I have to knock them off a platform. Anyway, it never really worked for me. But I do think there's something to be said about the high quality that Nintendo holds that franchise to. Now, maybe I don't see the delta there, but because I enjoyed Multiversus, I enjoyed Sony All-Stars, I enjoy these other games. And the fact that they don't have staying power is baffling to me, but maybe you're right. Maybe it really is just there is a quality difference that is appreciable to the people who are really in that scene, and they can feel it. They understand that there's a depth that's missing. Maybe that's just the long and the short of it. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe dedicated Smash players can feel all of Sakurai's blood, sweat, and tears right, put into the game,
yeah,
versus a different team or an indie dev somewhere.
Yeah, it's possible.
I'd love to float this larger question to both of you and also to the community, because listening to you talk now, I feel like Mario Kart also falls into this umbrella where Sonic All-Star Racing has been successful, and there's been many of them, and I think those games are excellent, and Crash Bandicoot Kart, whatever it was called. There's been others. Star Wars had one, but none of them seem to rise to the level. Disney, they have a freemium one right now. None of them seem to rise to the level or the zeitgeist or certainly the sales success of Mario Kart. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting. Nintendo seems to have a couple of these types of games down. And I wonder if part of it is just the how they're talked about. For a long time, every first-person shooter was a Doom clone.
Sure.
And when you do that, you're instantly necessitating the comparison. Or every other game that Sony launched was a Halo killer. Like, that's a heavy burden, you know, to be a Halo. I mean, not anymore. Now you can just be any first-person shooter. Zing. But I wonder if calling all of these games Smash-likes or Mario Kart-esque. I know when Multiversus launched, a lot of their PR, internal PR, referred to, it's like, it's a platform fighter. It is a platform fighter. And I wonder if they were really trying to lay that groundwork of like, this is a genre. Do not ultimately compare us to Smash, because then if we change something and you don't like it, that's bad for us. If we don't live up to something that they're doing, that looks bad for us. And I wonder how long it will take that we no longer call them Doom clones and they can be their own thing.
Sure.
Maybe. I don't know. You say that, but there's been plenty of successful Souls-likes in the last few years that aren't have anything
name
to do with
one. No, I'm just kidding.
I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting. Maybe folks that are more tied into that scene will shed some light for us. But either way, it's a bummer to see this game that, you know, it seems like Warner Brothers was sort of reinvesting in like this big relaunch and, you know, new engine and all the sort of trying to gain some footing with taking it away and then bringing it back doesn't seem to have worked. And it does seem like a bummer. I have to break it to my 8-year-old, you know.
You'll still have it. He can still play.
For him, yeah. We're not playing online anyway. I guess it doesn't matter. But
unless you really hate it, then yeah, break it to your 8-year-old. Be like, yeah, it's gone. Sorry, buddy. Just delete it off the hard drive.
he only has one question for me, and it's, Daddy, at least is there Aquaman?
Anyway, there will be.
Luckily, they right in below before the wire, the Aquaman got in the game. All right, Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
My story of the week is, I think, good news. I will say it's very good news. And that's Forza Horizon 5 is coming to PS5, also rumored to be coming to Switch 2, but you're not allowed to announce that yet. And this is the continuation of the ports, of the multi-platform porting of what used to be exclusive Xbox games. Forza Horizon 5, I think it was our game of the year for our show, Jeff, the year it came out. Love Forza Horizon 5.
We both love it. A platform defining game, one might say.
No, Jeff, didn't you not hear what I just said before? It comes to any platform you want.
Okay, never mind.
And I hope this means that Forza Horizon 5 maybe gets some new content. That'd be exciting. I would love Forza Horizon 5 with DualSense support. I love the DualSense controller. I hope they put a little bit of time in to make that a fun feature. That is the great news. I think more people being able to play Forza Horizon 5 is a good thing. The game is phenomenal. I still play it pretty regularly. It remains phenomenal. The perhaps more interesting question that I would have for you two, you can talk about whatever you want, but I feel like this is the next example of this. No, just talk about this. This is the next example.
I've given you a list of things that are acceptable to talk about.
Did you not get my email this morning? I sent it to you. Please stay on point. This is the next example of never believe a big company CEO. There's no way that when Xbox had its podcast 8 months ago and they talked about the four games coming and blah, 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 we're still going to have exclusives, blah, blah, blah. There's no way that they didn't know that this game was coming to PS5 8 months later or whatever it was. There's no way. There's no way. And so I just feel like anytime someone, you know, one of those folks goes on a press tour, you just have to be like, yeah, right.
I'm only going to believe news that I hear on the DLC podcast.
Thank you.
We've deleted all the other websites.
When we lie to you, we do it with a smile. You know, it's fun.
And a mustache. So you can believe.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that whole thing felt like we were sort of, you know, we were being talked to like a child, you know, like you know, it's not that there's no Santa Claus. It's that Santa Claus is in your heart, you know, it's that kind of a conversation. And then like a few months later, it's like, you know, no, let me break it to you. It's that, you know, remember when I said it was in your heart? I meant, you know, it's that kind of thing. It's like,
we're not abandoning our hardware. We're putting our hardware up for adoption at the fire station.
That's right. It's going to go to another home. It's so much happier there. And then like a few later, later, oh no. Fluffy's dead. Fluffy's dead. It felt like we don't think you can handle the full truth. So we won't make you have to handle it yet. And then we'll just sort of gradually unveil what the real truth is. I also feel like this is generally good news. I can understand some people that are all in on Xbox feeling like, oh, well, I could have just gotten a PlayStation and I would have had all the PlayStation stuff and all the Xbox stuff. I understand that point of view, but I do think more people being able to play great games is not a bad thing. Jan, you would sound like you were about to say something.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I understand the buyer's remorse that Xbox dedicated people may be feeling or have been feeling, honestly, for the last couple years. And I think there needs to be the realization that console fanboyism, console tribalism maybe shouldn't exist in the year 2025 at this point.
Yeah.
But this is great for folks that did pick up a PS5 and were looking across the water of like, man, that Forza looks really good. Gran Turismo, can't really get into that. It's too detailed. It's too calm. I need something more exciting like Forza. this also makes me wonder, especially with Indiana Jones eventually coming out onto the PS5, that there's the distinct possibility that we could live in a world where we don't have to think about a Halo killer anymore on a PlayStation console, like you said, Christian, because Halo will just be on the PlayStation.
It will be killing itself.
But it's just so wild because growing up, Halo was so heavily tied to Xbox in every aspect of the console. To think that I could be holding a DualSense controller or that there is someone out there with the 30th anniversary PlayStation in that beautiful color scheme playing as Master Chief somewhere is wild to think about.
I think that is going to happen. I think that is going to. I think we'll see a Master Chief Collection come out on PlayStation, if not the next mainline. I mean, the next mainline Halo seems a ways out, but I think we'll even get an earlier than that. We'll get a sort of, you know, collection of the old games out on PlayStation, because, you know, I think it is only a half step down from Halo to get to Forza. I think those for me are the two most defining Xbox franchises.
I think Gears is coming also. I truly think like everything is open season. It's just how hard is it to port? The only reason I think Master Chief Collection might be later is that engine is an old Xbox engine. It's not Unreal. It's not some easily portable engine per rumors. But do you know what is built on Unreal? Gears of War.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I think the floodgates are open.
Interestingly, Phil has talked recently about what they hope to their differentiator is, the reason that they want people to continue to buy Xbox hardware, or at least the next Xbox hardware, which may end up being the last Xbox hardware, who knows, but he keeps saying we're going to, you know, features capability of our box. We want the box to stand alone as being the most attractive in and of itself, regardless of exclusive software on it.
It's going to be an hourglass figure. It's going to be the best looking box you've ever seen. Yeah. You're going to want to buy that box.
Get that box.
Put that box on your shelf.
I'm curious, Jen, if you think there is, I feel like that is a hard proposition compared to, well, this one also has Spider-Man and, you know, everything, all the other Sony stuff. It's like, it's hard to say, well, this one runs at a higher frame rate, or what feature could be the thing that would make you go, I don't need to play those Sony things because I could play all the other stuff on this. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't 100% tell you what new feature on a new Xbox would entice me enough to go and pick it up, because as it is now in this next gen console generation we've been in for the past 4 or 5 years, I don't feel compelled to get a PS5 Pro, even though I've seen firsthand all the improvements. I don't think it's going to improve my gaming as much as it's being advertised. I think at this point, maybe Xbox just wants to jump the gun and perhaps say that they're part of the new next generation of consoles ahead of PlayStation, to just say that they have a new box.
Yeah.
And hopefully folks get enticed and intrigued that, oh, this is a new one out here, just like folks are going to be enticed of like, oh, Switch 2, that's the new one, I want to get the new one. I think I've also been under the model that I think Xbox would be very, very well served if they put out a Steam Deck like or a Switch like a portable console to that is just your Game Pass machine. I know you could do that with a ROG Ally right now, but an Xbox-centered one that streamlines the experience even more so for that like core console market that isn't quite adept at navigating a PC game store. I think they would be very well served. Like, imagine playing Sea of Thieves with a bunch of people in person on your little screens and just yelling as pirates in person. That could be fun.
Yeah, it does sound, the commercial writes itself. It does sound like they're working on that, although it seems like a ways off. But maybe, you know, maybe you hit on something else. You know, the feature being Game Pass, right, but I also don't believe that they wouldn't put Game Pass on PlayStation given the opportunity. So I don't know. Christian, do you have an answer for what could make a next Xbox more attractive than exclusive software would?
Not trying to be glib in this response, I think there are two things. One is price. If it's $300, that's a hell of a feature versus $700 for a PlayStation 5 Pro or whatever it is. And then the other feature, again, I'm not trying to be sarcastic in this response, is some version of their current marketing thing of this is an Xbox. What is their next feature for their next box? Ha ha, surprise, it was behind this curtain. You've had it the whole time, which I think, again, goes back to price. Mm. The feature of the next Xbox is it's on anything. It's everywhere. You already have it. If you want a dedicated player, they make one, but I think it is probably going to be cheaper in some form or fashion. And it's this idea that everybody has an Xbox. We're all Xbox gamers. You can Xbox on Switch. You can Xbox on iPhone. You can Xbox on anything. It's Oprah. You have an Xbox. You have an Xbox. Everybody has an Xbox. Because otherwise, in an era of ubiquitous software, mm-hmm. I don't think a console can have that many distinguishing features if the game needs to run on PC, on PlayStation, on Switch too. Because right. Then you get into what we talked about forever ago, Jeff, with like the Wii U problem. Are you designing software specifically for this tablet-y device to do all the things, or does it pretty much a standard game? The only other option I see, and we're seeing a bunch of lawsuits about this right now, is how Apple has tried to make their devices sticky. And that is mostly iMessage and a bundling of other services. So is there a communication way that's right. Like that's where your friends are, that's where your whatever is? But we've already seen that erode with both consoles having Discord integration, mm-hmm. Cross-play, cross-progression. So I truly yeah. don't think there is a quote-unquote real-world feature that makes the box enticing other than price point or you already have it.
Well, that's what I was going to bring up, is that in the Xbox 360 era, the reason the 360 did so well is because they got to community quicker than PlayStation did. Mm-hmm. And it was making Xbox Live easy, ubiquitous, all of the things. It felt like that was the generation that Microsoft dominated, because friends lists, achievements, like all of the stuff that made community and playing together work was happening there first. And I don't know if there's an equivalent to that now. If they can figure out some, I don't even mean equivalent community wise, I mean equivalent feature that is dramatic enough to be a differentiator. But that to me was the last time that, I mean, maybe not last time, Switch figured out a way to do, not just because they have exclusive software, which they absolutely do, but the portability of the Switch, I think, was mm-hmm. another thing where it's like, well, none of the other consoles have that. And I don't know if Microsoft can find some other thing that makes their system more interesting and more compelling to, average people. I don't see one on the landscape, but it'll be interesting to see what. I don't think just more powerful is good enough.
No,
I don't think getting 10 more frames per second on ours than the competitors is the answer. Because as Jen said, PlayStation 5 Pro, yes, it's selling out, but I personally don't feel compelled, and I don't think that's the answer anymore. I think the parity of the software it's fine. Getting 10 more frames per second. Whatever.
You also don't want to release your Indiana Jones on PlayStation 5 and have it be crappy, because that's still not good for you.
Right, like
if Forza Horizon 5 launches on PS5 and is bad,
right,
that doesn't look good for Xbox.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I wonder if with Xbox's approach that this is an Xbox, that's an Xbox, that's an Xbox, if maybe the potential killer feature that could propel Microsoft on to their next actual Xbox is like a pick up and play method. Like they were testing this out with xCloud, that you could just fire up your browser, fire up your phone, and be able to check out your library. I wonder if there is a potential future that process is streamlined even further. Maybe we even start to see an xCloud app on smart TVs, just like
there is on some. I know Samsung has some. I would love to see Quick Resume added to that, though. Maybe that's a tech feature of like in the cloud that you don't have to go through all the logins or whatever. You're right back where you are. But yeah, I think LG and Samsung both have Xbox cloud apps.
Maybe Google Stadia had it right.
Yeah, maybe. All right, we're going to come back with some more news right after these quick messages from our sponsor. This episode of DLC is brought to you by HelloFresh. HelloFresh! Ooh, you get farm-fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. So you skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. Christian, that meal kit life, I absolutely love it. It has changed my life. I have been doing meal kits for 15 years now. I feel like 10 at least, a long time. And I, you know, what HelloFresh says is right. Easy, fun, and affordable. Because I was not somebody that could cook before HelloFresh came into the world.
That's what the kids all say online too. They're like, Jeff is not cooking.
No,
in this game.
Watch me cook, they say. and I just sat in the corner like a sad person. But now it's easy. You got step-by-step instructions. It's fun, and I feel like I am providing for my family. I'm giving them food. I am the provider.
And the variety, you're not stuck doing like, well, these are the four meals I cook right. And I know to do. So what are we having for dinner tonight, family? The same thing we had.
Hot dogs again is not what I say anymore.
So you're saying Southwest corn and zucchini flautas, which when you're cooking the zucchini yourself, you don't need to be worried about getting that soggy restaurant zucchini as a vegetarian where they're like, here's the option. It's zucchini. And you're like, that's going to be mush. No. You make it. It's delicious. Huh?
Delicious. Like yeah. Delicious. I just made the brown sugar bourbon pork meatloaves, which I don't think there's actually any bourbon in it. It wasn't any bourbon, but this is the style. Family loved them. It came with the green beans. It came with delicious mashed potatoes. This is what we do. The mozzarella and herb chicken. I love that one. There's so many awesome recipes. And I don't have to figure out what's for dinner every night. Mm-hmm. You know, you're busy, especially weeknights. The kids got activities. I'm taking people to basketball, like taking people to gymnastics. I want to get dinner done easy. And thanks to HelloFresh, I can. And I eat well they got 50 wholesome, hassle-free meals to choose from every week that are delivered right to your door. I don't have to go anywhere. I don't have to do anything. And HelloFresh even has new ready-made meals that go from the fridge to your fork in just 3 minutes. It's the same high quality ingredients and restaurant worthy flavor you expect from HelloFresh, just with none of the work. And HelloFresh's 15 minute meals are done in just 3 simple steps, so you can eat better this year without all the hassle. We love the fact that I know what's going into my kids' mouths. Right? That's a huge thing, is that you go to, you know, you're worrying about fast food, you're worrying about restaurant stuff. You don't know what's in it. You don't know what you're actually feeding your kids. I do with HelloFresh. I know what I put into the recipe. I saw it. It's farm fresh. I know exactly, hey, do I want to use a little less salt? I can do that. It's up to me. I'm cooking it. I love that. And you, because you're listening to the show, can get up to 10 free meals and a free high protein item for life at HelloFresh.com/DLC10FM. That's one item per box with active subscription. Free meals apply to discount on first box. New subscribers only. Varies by plan. That's up to 10 free HelloFresh meals. Just go to HelloFresh.com/DLC10FM. That's DLC10FM. HelloFresh. America's number one meal kit. All right, my story of the week. We're gonna have to dig into it. There's a lot of facets to the story, but I do think it's an interesting one. Lots of news around BioWare this week. I think it's overblown, the impact of Dragon Age, the Veilguard. FIFA is also a part of this story. But
I think a big part, Jeff. Sorry. I think FIFA's FC 25 or whatever it's called.
Yeah, whatever
they lost
called.
The FIFA license. Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's overblown, the impact that Dragon Age Veilguard has been attributed to this. Regardless, the story is more layoffs at BioWare, and for the first time in recent history for the studio, or for, you know, not even recent history, long history, they are working on a single project. They have downsized to the point at BioWare where they're literally only working on one game, which hasn't happened in decades for BioWare. That one game is the next Mass Effect. So Mass Effect is going to have a lot riding on its shoulders. It is far off by all accounts. So we have
a massive effect was right there for you, Jeff. It was right. It was right there.
I think
there
it's
for you.
There's a veil over that's guarding it. I don't know. Anyway, multiple years away, it seems, this next Mass Effect. But they laid off a bunch more employees following big layoffs that we saw last year at BioWare. And we've had a number of people come out and basically say, hey, you know, we're head down, focused on Mass Effect. If this game doesn't hit in the way we want it to, it might be the end of BioWare. We don't know exactly how many people are working there, but they said it's a, quote, core team. And, you know, this has been one of the premier role-playing game developers over the last 30, 40 years. I guess 40 is stretching it. But, you know, decades of BioWare being a top-tier RPG developer. But it seems like things are tenuous. Obviously, things are tenuous all around the game industry. We've seen that. We've talked at length about it. But Jan, I wonder what you make of this, and whether we're sort of in the death throes of some really heavy hitters here.
It cannot feel good internally to hear that sentiment that, like, everything's riding on this.
Yeah.
And you may have just been moved over from a different team to join this now core leaner BioWare team. And now, if you didn't already have maybe survivor's guilt from withstanding a layoff, now you have that external pressure and internal pressure. I want Mass Effect to succeed. When I was reading the headlines, I saw a lot of folks putting Mass Effect 5, Mass Effect 5. And then I thought I had was gone. I had blipped out of time for a couple of years because I only remember Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3. And then I remembered Mass Effect Andromeda.
Yeah. Not a great game.
The fourth one in the series.
Yeah.
It's rough, y'all. It can't feel good. I hope they stick the landing, but that landing is not going to be around for a couple years at best.
Yeah. Yeah. And. You know, I am in the same boat rooting for them. It's hard when the mandate is make a mega hit rather than, you know, make a great game. I feel like that puts stresses on things and makes decisions that don't always lead to making a great game. You know, they lead to making a successful game, which sometimes aren't the same thing, and oftentimes make great games less great because we're worried about, you know, making it open to a wider audience or less interesting, less, you know, it's as we try to four quadrant everything and mainstreamize everything, it gets less daring. We have to be less daring because, we have to open the doors and not offend anybody, not push anybody out. Not, you know, that's what I worry about with art, where it's like, well, when commerce impedes too much on the making of something, usually is not for the better. Usually, yeah, it makes it worse.
It feels like the devs at BioWare are put into that position that they have to run a bake sale or a dance contest to save the community
That's
center.
Right.
But then they're also tasked with figuring out everything else along with the community center. Like, all right, you also have to figure out the plumbing and then like right. property tax.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like maintenance as well.
And P.S., this football game we have has been cratering.
Yeah.
You got to cover those yeah. footy sales too.
This Whoopsie. Better be the best chocolate chip cookies the world has ever seen. I hope you come up with some good recipe for the chocolate chip cookies, because they got to save the school. Really? The cookies do? The cookies have to save the school? I mean, this goes back to what you brought up before, Jan, too, which is, you know, mismanagement. It's mm-hmm. like, maybe let's not blame the cookies. You know?
The cookies are great. I look forward to those every year. But also, yeah, I think losing the FIFA license has a massive impact on the football club game. And I can't even remember the actual name of the football game.
Yeah, well, we're Americans.
FC year, whatever it is, and it has its own host of problems. Jeff, as you were talking, I'm always reminded of basically every public speech that studio heads from Larian give as yeah. the antidote to this.
Well, they came out strong against this, too. I don't know if you saw the comment that they were lambasting this whole situation. I don't have it in front of me, but
it's easy for them to do that right now as they are riding high, as high yeah. as they've ever ridden. But it does seem like they have a good understanding of making something that you're proud of, that you believe in, and that, you know, is going to resonate with folks. I'm curious, and Jan, I'm curious to what extent you're able to talk about this, but Jeff and I have been doing DLC forever, so I don't have necessarily the personal insight to it. But you talk about BioWare as being, you know, this decades old RPG hit maker. Mm-hmm. But a lot of those folks that made those hits, Jade Empire, KOTOR, old Mass Effects, are gone. But that the name BioWare still has this legacy. Jan, you weren't a founding member of Giant Bomb. Giant yes. Bomb has changed over the years. It has a legacy. It has this idea of what Giant Bomb is. Not GameSpot, is not IGN, is not Kotaku. Even there's a lot of overlap, and you know, we're all friends in the industry. But like, when someone's, oh, I love Giant Bomb, what is that? I don't know, stuff that you all have publicly talked about, some wrestling with, like, who are we? What's our identity? What do we bring yeah. to the table? And I think we see that in developers as well. Like, oh, Naughty Dog. I love Naughty Dog. Oh, you mean Crash? You love Crash? That's what you love? Oh, no. I just love Uncharted 2 is basically all I'm saying, you know, or whatever it is. And I'm curious kind of how you see this for BioWare as someone who's kind of lived that, albeit in a slightly different environment, but...
Yeah, I feel like it winds up, you are not only pushing the boulder up the hill of continuing to fulfill expectations and be that space that people had and fulfill that taste, but also trying to hook in other people. And it's like a dual-edged sword, and it winds up feeling like you're burning the candle at both ends, where, yes, you are like trying to uphold that image of the founders of the site or the founders of the studio at BioWare, but also you're trying to entice and uphold your corporate overlords. And speaking from someone that has been in that situation, it can get very hairy, and it feels, you start to get a little bit of cabin fever, where it's like, am I doing the right thing? Is this okay? Am I okay here? The hope is that everyone internally is united in that front to push through together. And I hope that everyone on a studio level, at least at BioWare, even if that same talent that brought us Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3 is no longer there, that there's enough of those core ideals to push through. Like, we all just want to be able to jump onto a planet and scan stuff for an extended period of time. We also just want to hear Rex just say Shepard repeatedly over and over again.
Good,
so I think those folks at BioWare definitely know what people want, but I think there's enough talent there over the years that can also help bring in new people and bring in newer, fresher ideas. I honestly, people poked fun at me when I brought this up, but I honestly think there are lessons to be learned from Anthem that could be incorporated into a Mass Effect 5. Maybe you have a class that is like a mech suit person or just a straight up robot that flies around. Because there were aspects of Anthem's traversal that were pretty cool.
I agree. Yeah. I found the comment from Larian. This is Larian's publishing director, Michael Douse, who published on social media criticisms of how EA is handling the BioWare situation. The quote is, to make it absolutely clear, what I hate about the way layoffs are carried out is that they are done before decision makers know what to do with a studio and not as a result of figuring out a direction. This is consistently true. It is a short-term cost-saving measure at a huge human expense that doesn't solve a long-term problem, a lack of viable strategic direction defined at the executive level. You could probably figure out if you trust your developers instead of firing them. On a positive note, I'm seeing a slight shift in this direction in the low-stakes arena of remasters and remakes, but they are the foundation of something bigger. Douse goes on to say that the real problem here is that you lose institutional knowledge. He says, quote, retaining that institutional knowledge is key for the next game. So the idea being that, you know, you lose these people who've been through it, and even if what they learned is that certain things didn't work on this installment or whatever, they did learn things. And mm-hmm. you've got this institutional knowledge that you're just stripping away from the studio and going, okay, do better next time. But all the people that have those learnings are gone, which I think is a really powerful point that I think is lost in all of this, is that it's not just that you're slimming down and getting to your core team. It's that you're losing a lot of people who have the know-how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There was an interesting article on a recent Edge that it wasn't about that, but I think hit on it. And it was about the Edge magazine, the partnership development houses that aren't often the lead billing on a game. It's like BioWare, and then it's like the 10 other studios that also worked on it. And some of the stuff that they talked about with those studios is these larger corporations will hire them, knowing that at the end of the day, it can be more expensive to use them because you have to spend 6 months ramping them up onto their engine and the internal tweaks that they made to the engine and all this other stuff that's happening. But that's an easier call, an easier ask for these higher level executives to make than carrying the salaries of folks in between projects, which ultimately could end up being cheaper, is as this quote you mentioned, if things are managed appropriately. But it's this spin up, spin down. Yeah. Well, we only hired this group to do this one thing and they did it, and now we're done with those costs. It's like, well, those costs for that one part were 10x.
Right.
What it would have been just do it internally if we could have managed expectations. It's fascinating.
Management. Yeah. It's not easy. And it's frustrating to see the cycle happen over and over again. All right. Well, let's get to some more positive topics, because we have a lot of really interesting games to talk about this week. So let's jump in and get to our playlists. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. Jan, perusing your playlist, there is a game I am so excited to hear about.
You have to guess which one, though, and you better.
I think he knows. I think he knows. But you know, you can start anywhere you like. But I our friend Danish, who's a frequent contributor here, sent me a video about one of your games on your list, and I am really intrigued.
Okay,
but you could start wherever you like.
I think I have an inkling that you may be intrigued, Jeff, by Motor Town Behind the Wheel.
Yes.
We cannot deny the huge popularity of GTA Online, right? And how a big part of GTA Online is the role-playing aspect. Now, what if we just remove all of the crime and all of the maybe over-exaggerated hoopla and some of the jank of GTA Online, and we have more of a streamlined, hey, you are in Motor Town and just grab a car and drive it around, do a job. If you pick up a taxi, then pick up passengers. Maybe you want to be a bus driver. Go be a bus driver. And it's just a very zen-like game, But as soon as you hop into a public server or maybe a server a friend spins up, it kind of fulfills that GTA Online role-playing itch that I've always been curious about, of like, oh, well, maybe I will go deliver rice and everything, but a friend will decide to be an inebriated garbage man that runs me off the road, and I made a mistake of not strapping all of my cargo to my truck, and now my crate of oranges is like in the ocean now.
This game boggles my mind. Christian, have you heard about this game, Motortown Behind the Wheel?
Yeah, and it also aesthetically, it looks great. It's kind of like, what if Virtua Racing made today? You know, yes. So it's clearly polygons, but much sharper, a really bright, sunny color palette for everything. And then just, like you said, Janet, it seems like you can't, I have not played it yet. It's in early access right now. You can play it as a very zen experience, or you can play it as like strap in jerk.
Well, it seems to be like, what if every single thing about a culture was based on a vehicle, was like, yeah. it's kind of the Fast and the Furious philosophy. Fast and the Furious is like, you could do anything as long as you're in a car. You know, it's like, you want to jump from skyscraper to skyscraper? Sure, a car. You want to go to space? Yep, in a car. You know,
we need to climb Half Dome. Better equip a car.
That's right. The way I saw this game described was, you know, okay, so you want to get a really sweet car. Awesome. You see that cool Mustang or what, you know, Lamborghini, whatever. You want to get it. So you need money. Mm-hmm. So take a job. You could get, as Jan mentioned, any job that you can imagine that has to do with cars. You can drive a bus. You could be a garbage collector. You could be a taxi driver. You could be a pizza delivery person.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to be a pizza delivery person. I have a moped. That's cheap. I can get a moped, put stuff on the back of my moped, pizzas, deliver them through the city. There's a whole, you know, economy based on people want pizza, I pick up the pizza. Well, but you know what? I could make more money with the pizzas if the pizzas were better, had better ingredients. Okay, so how does that happen? Well, I can deliver better ingredients to the pizza store, so I can use my moped or get a different car to pick up, go to the factory that makes the really good cheese and bring that to the pizza. Well, but how does the factory get really good cheese? Well, they have to get milk. So maybe I can get a pickup truck to go to the farms and deliver the better milk to the cheese factory. And it's like layers and layers and layers of this economy that are all being simulated. And there's actually real humans doing all of those things that are actually impacting the layer of every single other thing that's happening.
The wildest part of this game is that it is a single dev making it.
It's nuts.
And I think it's been out since like in early access since early 2022, or maybe it was like even late 2021. Like, it's been motoring on for a while already.
Well, and the thing that you need to tell me about, Jan, because this is the thing that I can't believe, is that every aspect of this feels like a full experience. That there's not, it's not like, oh, the pizza delivery thing is, you know, the functionality is kind of thin because there's other things in the game that are more interesting to do. No, like every single job, and there's numerous, even the delivering from the farm has got its own entire mechanisms that all interoperate and feel like a full game. It's like a million full games all in this interoperable world.
Yeah, it's funny because I guess you could choose which type of driving you want to mainline, whether you want to go down the pizza path or the farmer path, and perhaps you get sick of delivering pizzas. There are a handful of other jobs to go and do. And if you are just playing by yourself, you could easily lose a good chunk of time just picking up people on the bus and properly delivering them.
Yeah.
But then you can add the cooperative chaos of everyone working together on the island, and maybe you have a couple wild cards. I definitely think that, like, sorry, Jeff,
please.
If you have a young child that is curious about, or that really enjoys driving and maybe interacting with people, I don't want to say that this may be the gateway to something like that, but perhaps this could be that avenue.
My biggest question is it fun? Is it fun? I understand the Zen thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that people derive fun from that. You know, people play Power Wash Simulator and all that stuff. That's not usually my jam. I'm not into the chore core stuff. Mm-hmm. And this feels like it's right on the edge of that.
Yeah.
Do you find it fun?
It took a while for the fun to spin up. And that initial onboarding process of like, okay, what am I doing? What is any of this? And then I quickly went into debt in the game. And I was thinking I would never financially recover from this, but, it is that type of game where you kind of have to create your own mechanisms and structures for fun. It is not going, it will give you a couple of core objectives to work through initially as you're playing the game. But after a while, you were kind of just free to your own path of what you want to do. And for some people, that is a lot of fun. But for some other people that are craving a little bit more structure, maybe some story, I could see that not being their jam.
Yeah. Yeah, it does seem like you have to really want to get better cars. Yeah. That just feels like the hook is like, earn the money to get the better car, or you just love being a bus driver.
You know? You play it publicly. What was the war game? Oh, I could look it up. Maybe seven episodes ago. You load the bullets.
You have to. Oh, right. The factory that makes the bullets is also people playing the game. Yeah. What was that? Yeah. It was an isometric game. I think. Who was telling us about that?
I'm gonna find it here real quick
because it's. Find it. This new subgenre.
It was with Dave. Dave Jewett was. So it was like, let's see, beginning of December. We talked about it for folks that want to go back and listen.
But did you get the game name?
Oh, I was looking for the game name. No, I can pull that up too, though.
Get the game. That's the important part. Is the name of the game? No, go back to December. Yeah,
important. To me, what was important was remembering the game we talked about. Foxhole is the name of the game.
Right.
But I was trying to figure out when we talked about it.
No, so you wanted to. The month was the most important part for people. What month were we talking about? That.
Yeah, that's my chore core. Understanding months. How do they work?
Foxhole. Anyway, the game we're talking about today is Motortown Behind the Wheel. Fascinating. Like, my position with this, Jan, is that even if I never play this, I love that it exists.
Yeah.
Love that it may not be for me, but I love that people are into this. Just the idea of it happening is so cool to me.
That's how I feel about some of the driving simulator games or job simulator games out there. Yeah. Like, I don't want to sit behind the... It's not a wheel with a train, levers of a train. But I'm happy that there is a burgeoning community watching or playing as someone piloting a train. You don't pilot a train. Conducting a train.
Conducting, yeah.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah. Yeah, and I watched a couple of minutes of a YouTube video of these guys doing truck simulator, where you're just a big rig trucker driving across America, you know? And they did an 8-hour real-time drive trucking thing. And most of it is just driving at night, you know? Just like, but they loved it. And I'm like, you know what? I love that this exists. This is not something that would be fun for me at all, but the idea that video games are creating that experience for people is, I don't know, somehow very appealing to me in the abstract.
It's an interesting form of escapism to insert yourself into a profession.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, Motortown Behind the Wheel. What else is on your playlist?
I've been playing a lot, almost too much of Marvel Rivals. As soon as Sue Storm and Reed Richards got added to the game, I have been hooked specifically playing those two characters. Mm. And I have not done any bit of ranked play. I've just been doing quick play over and over again, and it has been occupying so much time. The best thing for me about Marvel Rivals is the character designs have been off the charts. Everyone looks so dang cool. And then like the promise that we will be like receiving new characters, I believe the developers had said every month and a half, which sounds like a wild cadence. And
yeah,
for a lot of people, they had the stink that, oh, this is just an Overwatch clone. But at this point in Marvel Rivals' lifespan as a game, it has more characters that are enticing than Overwatch or Overwatch 2.
Yeah.
The possibility of new characters is also so cool. Like, I can't wait for the eventual X-Men pack or the eventual West Coast Avengers pack to drop. And it feels like they're definitely going to get super duper niche with some of the characters. Like, I can't wait for them to drop Toad as like a playable character and for Toad to really mess up the meta of stuff, because there are a lot of characters that have great mobility now, and I can't wait to see how that will carry over later on.
It is pretty cool. I love the idea of West Coast Avengers. Like, give me a Wonder Man. Give me Wonder Man.
I mean, it's coming as a show, right? There's definitely going to be a Wonder Man character when that is a Disney Plus show, right? Isn't it kind of soon? I think.
Yeah,
Wonder Man?
I hadn't heard that.
That was in their 2025 hype trailer. Yeah.
Yeah. I think so.
We saw evidently reported a almost 40% drop in players playing Overwatch 2 since Rivals was released. So it's really eaten the lunch of Overwatch 2.
Yeah.
But I agree with you, man. The character designs are just excellent. Bold, interesting. You know, I think they figured out that very difficult thing to do with Marvel characters, which is how do you make alt skins fun, right? Yeah. It's a hard thing because they're so iconic. Their looks are so iconic that you often don't want to mess with what is already in your brain of what that character is supposed to look like. And somehow Rivals has found a way to make all these alt costumes awesome.
Yeah, I have never seen this much hype around the Maker since the Maker's original drop into the Ultimate Universe. And they're just it's so entertaining to see everyone else get excited about comic book characters that like have been near and dear to my heart for years now.
Yeah.
Like, it is funny to see so many people interested in Cloak and Dagger now and just want to know their deal. And meanwhile, here I am with like volumes of comics of like, let me tell you about Cloak and Dagger.
I love that. But the other thing that I was reading is somebody was writing an article saying, I think even, I can't remember who was saying it, but it was either Marvel itself or one of the devs was saying that they have not seen success of Marvel Rivals transfer into people picking up comic books. Which is a bummer. Like, yeah. I wish they could figure out that pipeline, you know, kind of push people into reading comics. I hope that happens.
Definitely.
But they have not, evidently not seen that be the case, which is a bummer. But
you mentioned all the characters, Jan. Our friends on Into the Aether, Brendan and Steven, talked about this game on an episode, maybe a couple episodes ago, and they really hit on that aspect of how this game just has so many characters, and that for them, and I think it sounds like what you were saying as well, allows for some of the fun to happen. Overwatch felt very strict about, okay, we're going to have one this, we're going to have one, okay, now we're going to have two of this, one of this. And Marvel Rivals feels more willing to be like, we have 20 of these. Some of them are broken, but we're going to let you find the fun. Like, Sue's a little, you know, Sue's ultimate is, okay, whoopsie, we messed up, but keep playing her. And people are like, yeah, we love that. And I think that speaks to some of the longevity of the game is letting people eat, so to speak.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I've definitely rolled into games where there are three healers on a team facing off a team of five tanks.
Yeah,
and that's mathematically right. We shouldn't be doing the nearly enough amount of damage to take them out, but we steamrolled through them. And so I definitely love that aspect of Marvel Rivals 2 versus an Overwatch where, no, you could just, your team comp is whatever you feel like today.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, it's a huge hit, and it's interesting because this is a genre that is really packed and getting a lot of casualties, these games going down. Marvel Rivals figured it out. And I think a lot of it is the IP, you know, but not all of it. As you pointed out, it's made some great design decisions as well. All right, we got more games to talk about, but we're going to take a quick break for a sponsor. We'll be right back with more of the playlist. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace! Or maybe I should just say DLCpod.com. Because that's what
you got to keep it going, though. Built on Squarespace, just like JeffGanata.com, just like RichJeffBuzzer.com. And you just list, like, we're here for 2 hours listing every website.
I'm just yodeling at that point. I'm just screaming about. But we use Squarespace. We have used Squarespace for our personal websites. Christian and I, there's only one place we go. There's only one tool we use. That is Squarespace. Because
for the future website, jeffbyodelin.com.
Jeffbyodelin. what? URL already taken. You know,
sorry,
honestly, Squarespace is a great place to buy URLs as well because they'll suggest you'll Jeff B. Yodelin is taken. So why not jeffyodels.net, you know? I don't know. I don't know what Squarespace would suggest, but it
cast
is.
Cast a wide net. With Squarespace.
Hey, and you know, designing a website used to be hard, but now Squarespace has design intelligence, which combines 2 decades of their industry-leading design expertise with cutting-edge AI tech to unlock your strongest creative potential. Design intelligence empowers anyone to build a beautiful, more personalized website tailored to their unique needs. You can craft a bespoke digital identity to use across your entire online presence. It's so simple. It's so easy. And if you're going to sell stuff on your website, Squarespace Payments is the easiest way to manage your payments in one place. Onboarding is fast and simple. You get started in just a few clicks and start receiving payments right away. Plus, give your customers more ways to pay with popular payment methods like Klarna, ACH Direct Debit, Apple Pay, Afterpay, and ClearPay. It's just the easiest tool set. You can connect all your social and multimedia accounts in one place. You've got invoicing. You've got SEO tools. Squarespace just has thought of everything. Why do it any other way? Why pay people? You can do it yourself. And we're going to make it easier and less expensive for you. All you got to do is check out squarespace.com. You can build your whole website for free. Go to squarespace.com/DLC. You get that free trial. And then when you're ready to launch, you save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain by using our promo code DLC. Again, squarespace.com/DLC to get yourself started. Just check it out. You don't even have to give them a credit card. But when you are ready to publish your website, save 10% off by using our promo code DLC. All right, Christian Spicer, what is on your playlist?
We have a couple of things in common, or one thing I think in common, but I want to save that. I want to start with, and I've been doing some tinkering, which I'll get to, but where I want to start is, speaking of IP, Marvel's Spider-Man 2 is now available on PC. I was provided a code from Sony. We raved about Marvel's Spider-Man 2 when it first launched on PlayStation 5. There's already been a hot fix patch for the PC launch. If you look on Steam, it's launched to mixed reviews. Folks were having some serious problems with the game, some hard crashes, some seemingly out of nowhere hard crashes, some stuttering, and some other issues. I have played, according to Steam, about 3 hours again of Marvel's Spider-Man 2, again on PC now. I have not seen any issues. I played about 90 minutes pre that hot fix and then another 90 after. The only issues that I noticed were like a shimmer. If I, you know, like sometimes where the frame gen or some of the fancy rendering stuff is a little too much at a point and it hasn't really been fine tuned. So I was getting a little shimmer and I turned off. I think it was frame gen I turned off and that seemed to clear it up for me. I will restate for folks who haven't or don't remember when we first talked about Marvel Spider-Man 2. The opening probably 5 hours of this game, I think, are some of the best of any game ever. The opening 30 minutes is just an incredible tour de force of cinematic action. And I think for that type of third-person action game, one of the best Mario 1-1 approaches of onboarding a player you're doing so many things in that first 90 minutes. You learn a new mode of transportation that didn't exist in the first two games, or Spider-Man and Miles Morales. You learn how to use your techniques that you haven't done yet. You know, your R1, push a button to unleash these types of weapons that people haven't had experience with. You learn the basic moves. You're all doing that in this huge cinematic moment of, I think, still one of the most visually impressive scenes in any game, of this huge open city and all of this disaster happening around it, with multiple characters coming in and you're talking and you're switching between characters. Truly incredible moment of the version that we used to get in Halo, is like, look up, soldier. Look down, soldier. I think it can't be understated how good of a job Insomniac did in terms of onboarding these somewhat complicated mechanics in the moment in this really cool cinematic event. Absolutely love it. My broader thoughts about Spider-Man 2, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on it, gentlemen. When you've already waited so long for a game to come out, you will love Spider-Man 2. You don't have a PS5. You're waiting. It finally comes out. Is there a price point where you're like, I'll just keep waiting because I've already waited so long. I don't feel like I need to be part of the zeitgeist because there's already a million guides on how to find every, you know, doohickey in the game. You're not part of it in the moment. And I'm really curious where we see the pricing of this style of game going to reach the most consumers, where it will go on sale, you know, and you're not lacking things to play. Is there a point where this game launches at $50-$60 and you're like, I'll get it 2 years from now? Or do you think enough folks have been eagerly anticipating this moment that it makes sense to them at this price? I don't know.
I would suspect most people are jumping on it. If you're excited about playing Spider-Man 2 on PC, I think that's why you're seeing so many of these negative reviews pop up on Steam, is people are like, I have been waiting. I jumped on this. I had some technical issues. It got me frustrated. I'm going to take out my frustrations in my Steam review. And I'm glad they're hot fixing it. It seems like they're going to continue to do so until it runs well. It's a bummer that it didn't run well on the moment it launched. Mm-hmm. But I think folks are, I mean, this is an incredible game. And I think there's still a lot of people that just don't have PS5s, but do have PCs. And want to be able to play this, maybe not at the highest settings, but play it on their PC and experience what is a really excellent game. So I don't know. That's my take, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think with PC gamers have that expectation that, like, if I really want it later, it still will go on sale. But
yeah,
I've been clamoring to check out Spider-Man for forever now. There is that transparency with Steam reviews that, okay, other folks are having a bunch of issues, I can just wait. I'll revisit it after a couple patches. It is enticing though. If I were in that position, if I did see a $40 or $50 price tag of like, maybe I will just buy it now and I'll try and have my fun despite some of the issues.
Yeah,
it is stunning. The amount of ray tracing that you can push if you have the GPU to do it, which I have a 4080, which is just garbage, just absolute crappy GPU now. It's just terrible.
You should be embarrassed even admitting that. Now
I felt bad saying, because I know that someone threw up in their car when I said 4080. Yeah. They just had to pull over and they were violently. They got ill when I said it.
It was fun when we could say we had beefy GPs, but now we don't. We can't say that anymore.
Mm-mm. We have weaky GPs, I think, is what we need to
wimpy jimpies.
Trademark it.
But it looks stunning. I thought it looked stunning before on PlayStation 5. Absolutely stunning. And Jeff, it has super ultra-wide support as well, which is...
Ooh, doggies, that's good stuff. Especially with Spider-Man, when you're... You know, I played the first one. I played Miles Morales, both the PC versions. Haven't tried this one yet on PC, but... swinging through the city in super ultra wide ain't nothing better. Nothing better.
And it's a phenomenal game. Just to reiterate for folks that don't remember, we talked about it before, my only real nits with the game are narrative. I think the last third narratively falls a little flat. And then Jeff, I think you mentioned it. You said it well when we talked about it before succinctly, is it suffers a little bit from always needing to give you something to hit, which I think kind of leans into the narrative. It's like, oh, we have this open city, but you always need to be able to be punching some sort of bad guy. Yeah. And I think ultimately
what if there's a billion D Venoms is
What if we always have a city overrun by things you can punch?
Yeah. But it's cool.
The narrative suffers
still,
for that.
What happens to the city in that game is yeah. cool.
Yes. It's an incredible game. Absolutely incredible game. And my 3 hour experience on PC has been a real treat. It's sad that sad, however you want to say it. I am going to beat this game again.
It's sad that I'm going to devote my life to this game.
I really like it. And I've already unlocked everything in Manhattan. Don't at me.
All right. What else is on your playlist?
It's very good. The other thing I want to talk about is game streaming. I talk about GeForce Now a lot on this show. And we talked about Xbox Game Cloud. Folks, I should have pulled this up before, but I will pull it up as I talk right now. But I've been doing tinkering with Apollo and Artemis game streaming, which is local streaming throughout your own hardware, basically. So it's different than GeForce Now in the sense that
you're running the game on your computer, not in the cloud.
You need to have the computer to run the game.
Yeah.
You can access into it from far away if you set it up that way, but you can't, I'm running this with ray tracing, even though I only own a MacBook Air. It doesn't work that way. You are running your own game. I tried it before. It's Moonlight and Sunshine. Apollo is a fork of Moonlight.
Oh, okay.
And there was a recent video from Retro Game Corps who does a bunch of handheld machines like the Odin 2 Pro and the Anorbic type handheld consoles. I really like his content. And he did one recently about game streaming, a quick guide. And he talked about both Apollo and Artemis on that. And Azid Balbanian also reached out to me on Blue Sky about trying it again. And he has a great guide, Jeff, for getting it running on an Apple Vision Pro headset.
I am doing that this week. You sent me link and I hadn't had a chance to try it, but I'm excited to give it a shot.
Yeah, so I sent you his guide for that. And what Apollo does that I had problems with Moonlight before, and Razer has their own fork of this that is basically Apollo too. They've tried to simplify it. Razer software, some people, you know, caveat, don't like for the other stuff that's included in it sometimes. But what works really well about Apollo and Artemis when it works is that it creates its own virtual monitor that knows your monitor settings. So be that in a VR headset, or I'm playing on my Odin 2 Pro or on my Steam Deck. And so I don't need to then change my resolution down to whatever by 800 if it's on Steam Deck. It knows the device's resolution and will set it accordingly. And then when I stop and come back to my PC, it knows that I'm on a 4K screen and it switches back. So a lot of the stuff that GeForce Now does really well, where you pick it up and you play it. If I'm playing on my iPhone, it knows that I'm in an ultra wide environment now. I have that resolution and I come back and play GeForce Now on my PC. It knows I'm on 16:9, 4K. It sets that up.
That's and really Apollo, nice because that it can be such yes. a huge pain to go back and forth. It makes you not even want to deal with it because it's like, ugh, I got to go to the settings mm-hmm. and every
yes.
time.
What yeah. setting changed? I don't notice until an hour in that something doesn't look right.
Yeah, yeah.
And I will say it hasn't been flawless for me. There have been times where I've come back and for whatever reason, something is different on my main 4K screen than it was when I was playing on my Odin 2. I've been playing a lot of Spider-Man this way, just sitting on the couch with my dog. But when it works, it's awesome. The thing for me about both of these, and it's one software, Apollo runs on the host computer and Artemis you load up on your receiving device, whether it's the Odin 2 or your Steam Deck. And depending on your device, you might still be running a fork of Moonlight. Doesn't matter. This is the issue for me with these things. I end up spending all of my game time tinkering and never playing. I'm like, ooh. Like anytime someone sends me something, like it's really easy to do. Here's the GitHub link. I'm like, well, there's 3 hours, you know,
yeah,
like
it's so true. Yeah. So true.
I am just going to be on this GitHub. I'm going to be in the community. I'm going to join into the Discord. Yeah. I'm going to research all the stuff. I'm going to set it up. I'm going to test it. That worked really well.
I always
now
feel
it's dinner
like,
time.
I feel like that's, you know, the old stand-up comedian line. Well, that's my time. That's my time. You know, it's like, I sat down to play the video game for 2 hours and I set it up. Well, that's my time. I'm out.
Yeah. But it's a really interesting, and I had not been following Moonlight that closely, but this Apollo and Artemis fork and what the Razer software does, I'm running still a Windows 10 machine, so the Razer software is only Windows 11. But what it does also is really hope to simplify it. The Razer software keeps you off of GitHub. You know, yeah. It's like you download the Razer for your host PC, the Razer for your receiving screen, and it should just work. And if you haven't tried it and you want that PlayStation Portal approach to PC gaming, excuse me, in your house or out and about, I'd recommend checking out both Apollo and Artemis.
Very cool. I am definitely going to give that a shot this week. I tried to do GeForce Now on my newly working, you know, now that it works for Apple Vision Pro, but I got GeForce Now is all sold out.
Well, they're updating their their payment provider, I think. Right. It does seem weird to see cloud services sold out. It's funny.
It is very odd. Very odd. What else is on your playlist?
The last game I want to talk about, provided a code for this game as well, is Citizen Sleeper 2.
Yeah.
Jeff, I believe you've been playing some Citizen Sleeper 2.
Mm-hmm. 2-2. Yeah, Starward Vector.
Citizen Sleeper 1, a lot of friends raved about. It was on people's favorite game of the year. It touched them personally and emotionally with the narrative it told. I've been doing this long enough to know that it is not my style of game. It is not the type of game, kind of like Chorecore we talked about. Chorecore doesn't speak to a lot of people. What Citizen Sleeper 1 delivered wasn't something that I typically crave for my gaming experience. It provided a code for Citizen Sleeper 2. I've spent about an hour with the game. And I will start by saying it is still not my main type of game. This is not the type of game that I will seek out randomly and, you know, in a sea of too many games. That said, man, this game brings a vibe to it.
Yeah.
The aesthetic of what the game does from just the title screen I talk about in Alan Wake and the Remedy games, how they are just complete packages. That, you know, you go into a new room and it's like, boom, the lake house and all of that stuff. And the way Citizen Sleeper 2 is also conveying its feelings and its narrative through every aspect of the game seems top tier, right up there at, you know, the best of the best of what it's trying to do. It's a very different game than those Remedy games. It is a...
It's a tabletop, it's a tabletop role-playing game.
Yeah, a lot of reading.
Yes.
Baldur's Gate 3 is a tabletop role playing game too. Citizen Sleeper 2 is almost more of a virtual narrative text adventure game.
Yeah.
Yes, than how Baldur's Gate 3 realizes it.
For sure.
And it's a different, I think, emotional pull than the first game. This game so far, again, I've played about an hour. I think it feels more of joining up with your crew. You're pulling in a crew, you're getting onto your ship, you're adventuring out to different stations, you're kind of on the run. The first game, I think, dealt with a lot of feelings of freedom and who are we and identity. And this game so far to me seems to be playing with the notion of who are we as a community? Who are we as a whole? And what does it mean to be a part of that community? Which I think is really interesting. And I've heard, and from what I've seen from this first hour, it seems to be kind of based around a more episodic narrative structure, which I find really fascinating. I love the idea of a game that allows me to get in and dip out when I've done a thing. And what keeps me hooked is learning more about the characters and how they play. Really, really fascinating. Really, really compelling package of a thing. The things that kind of make my anxiety up is the tabletop nature of it. Of you start the day with your set number of die. You roll them.
Yeah.
The game tells you, like, you can do this. You have a 50% chance of it working. And I'm like, well, that means I have a 50% chance of it not working. And that's going to make me feel bad.
There's a lot of failure in this game. Yeah. A lot of failure.
Which I think the game presents as opportunity.
Yeah.
But I take it as failure.
hearing that they've kind of shifted to an episodic approach is especially enticing. I really enjoyed Citizen Sleeper 1, but I ran into that issue of, okay, where do I stop now? I don't know when I'm done. What, is the game going to tell me I'm done? I'm just tired of reading now. I'm just going to stop.
I mean, reading on a computer screen is not ideal. You know,
it's the reason I have a Kindle in addition to an iPad. I like to read on Paperwhite versus a
thing. It plays great on Steam Deck, Citizen Sleeper 2. I think we're going to talk about this more next week. If all things work out, I don't like talking about things when they're not 100% set, but we may have – this is a solo developer, and he may be joining us, Gareth. He may be joining us next week on the show. So I'm hoping we'll talk a lot more about this game, but it's an incredible accomplishment. The writing is excellent. It really is beautiful writing, which is what you want out of a text adventure, mostly text reading adventure experience. If you liked Citizen Sleeper 1, you were going to love this one. It tweaks some of that formula, as Christian mentioned, but, man, it's still – you feel like you're on the razor's edge all the time. Yeah. And but it's really, really cool. It's such a great vibe, as you said as well. I have a lot of really positive things to say about this one, but I think we're going to talk a lot more about it next week. Hopefully Gareth will be here to talk about it. But it's a great game. Really worthy successor.
Yeah. And Jen, I think you should check it out. Like I said, I haven't really got into that full episodic structure of it yet. But from what I've read and from what I've seen already, it does seem like you have your crew, you go to a thing, you do that thing. And I think that then gives you a nice moment of, man, yeah. I've been stressed out for the last 30 minutes. Let me reset for a minute. Citizen Sleeper 2. It's on, I think it's only on PC at the moment. If that, I think that's true. I think it's only on Steam right now.
Yeah. All right. I have some really interesting games to talk about in my playlist as well. A couple of real hidden gems. But let's start with one that's a little less hidden. It's on Game Pass. It's called Orcs Must Die Death Trap. This is the latest in the Orcs Must Die franchise, which is sort of a third-person action version of a tower defense game where you set up, you know, there's going to be waves of orcs coming at you. You set up your defenses as best you can with what you can afford, and then you run into the roving hordes of orcs, and you slice and dice them using your character's abilities, assisted by the defenses that you set up in advance.
You're just describing life in 2027, Jeff.
That's also true. By this. That's also true.
Orcs are now a major societal problem.
We will look back at 2025 as the dawn of orcs. Don't you know? We were mining for EV batteries, and we discovered orcs deep in the Earth's crust. Everybody knows
this
happened.
I wouldn't put it past the world. I have enjoyed Orcs Must Die games in the past. These are co-op games. You play this with a friend. There's no interest in playing an Orcs Must Die game by myself. It's just not – that's not the fun. The fun is – yeah, they're coming from the other side. Yeah, get over there. Okay, I got this one. Okay, oh no, my turret is down. They're attacking our base. That's the fun of Orcs Must Die, is playing it in co-op. I have been playing Orcs Must Die Death Trap in co-op. The biggest addition to this new version of the game, if you're familiar with the franchise, the biggest addition is the new sort of roguelite elements, which, you know, I love. I love me some roguelite stuff. So after every round, you have successive rounds where you're on this map, you're setting things up, the orcs come in, you kill all of them, successfully protecting your base. You have another round of setting more things up. You've earned money because of the chain kills that you got, earned you currency. You can spend that currency on new defenses, augmenting your defenses, talking about what worked and what didn't work. Okay, we got to shore up this side. Oh, no, there's another door that's going to open on this round that we didn't have last round. Another access point for the orcs. You know, all that stuff is really fun. But between those rounds, you get the classic, you know, Slay the Spire, what have you, infinite number of roguelites at this point that do the same thing. Three options of what to select as a power-up bonus cool perk. You know, this is Vampire Survivor leveling up. This is every roguelite these days does something similar. You get the randomized selection of three different things that can augment you, your character, your stats, your turrets, whatever it is. That is a cool addition to the game. Yeah. I love that. I love the decision making of that. I love the cool. It's additive. It's always like, look what cool stuff you can do. Do you want this cool thing or that cool thing or that cool thing? And it makes every run different because they're randomized and you don't know which selection of power-ups you're going to get this time. And so you start specializing because, like, oh, I can get this really cool perk that lets me do more fire damage. So, okay, I'm going to prioritize the fire traps and stuff. In the best way, as roguelites do, it kind of defines your run because of the randomized decisions that you're making, or, you know, your decisions aren't random, but you get what I'm saying. And I love that. I think it works really well. I am having an absolute blast playing Orcs Must Die Death Trap. A friend of mine and I are we're just having so much fun. It's a blast. It's, you know, there's different character classes that offer different play styles. Those are really well done. They're all new for this game. Yeah, I think the game looks fun. It's got a, you know, this cartoony aesthetic that's really great. And you just get into this wonderful, we're overwhelmed, we got to get by the skin of our teeth. Can we do it? Can we do it? Oh, no, they got past that part. How did they find a new pathway? And I think the thing that Orcs Must Die does really, really well is it makes the strategic layer as fun as the action layer. Because the action layer is, you know, classic third-person action, slice and dice and using my stuff off cooldown, blasting the enemies. You know, all of that's a blast, but then you have that's done, and we're in a different phase where we're just setting things up, placing traps. And there are so many smart design decisions in that layer that's really hard to do. For example, it gives you tons of information. During that strategic layer, it is showing the path of the orcs as they're going to come in. As ghosts, there's little ghost forms showing you where they're going to go. You set up a barrier or you set up some certain traps that'll dissuade the orcs from going that way. Well, it changes the ghost pathway. So you see the effect that you're going to have, and you can set up a trap, then just destroy it and get that currency back, set it up somewhere else. It is willing to let you get things exactly as you want them. There's no time limit. There's no, we got to set up everything within 30 seconds, a minute, whatever it is. You know, so you rush. Oh, no, it wasn't exactly how we wanted it. No, not with Orcs Must Die. You can spend as much time as you want. Your only limiting factor is how much currency you have to spend on purchasing traps. But it's cool because all the different characters have a special trap that's just for them that they get to use. So there's that fun variety in picking which character you're going to use. And the bad guy varieties make you have to, you know, not just specialize in one thing. You have to sort of think about all the ways that they're going to, you know, ramp up over the course of the rounds. It's a fun game. It's a super fun game. If you've got some friends, this is a great hangout game. It engenders conversation because you have to coordinate. You have to strategize. I'm having a blast playing Orcs Must Die Death Trap. And it's on Game Pass. So it's like if you and your buddies have Game Pass subscriptions, you can all download it and all play and jump right in. It's great fun. Great fun.
Console differentiator right there.
Indeed. Indeed. okay, I want to talk about a real hidden gem. I don't see a lot of people talking about this game, but I think this game is really, really cool. It's an indie game called Co-Ridden. Co-Ridden. I've heard people pronounce it Co-Ridden, but it's clearly
Co-Ridden.
Co-Ridden. Clearly a take on the fact that you can play in co-op and ride each other. I'll get to that.
A real hidden gem.
A real hidden gem. This is a top-down isometric action RPG where the central hook is you have a melee attack, ranged attack, but also you can transform into an animal. And you defeat animals to steal their DNA to be able to transform into them. Super cool, super fun. You can transform into them anytime you want. You have a stamina bar that is used up whenever you do any kind of attack, ranged attack or melee attack. But you have different stamina bars for your monster form and your creature form and your human form. So it makes it so that you're in these fights and you'll be swapping back and forth. You'll be attack, 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 attack. Oh, my stamina's done. Swap into my human form. Attack, 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 attack. Oh, my stamina's back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. That, ladies and gentlemen, is super fun in this game. I really enjoy the combat. But that's not even the coolest part. The coolest part is that it is an action RPG in the spirit of a Diablo. It doesn't feel like a Diablo. I think this game has a look and feel that really isn't like anything else. And that's really hard to do these days. It really has its own identity. But definitely the closest comparison would be a Diablo or a Path of Exile. And so you are getting lots of loot. And that loot lets you level up your character, improve your character's attacks. And, you know, you get cooler stuff and better armor that has stats on it, but also your creature form, and you're getting new creature forms that you can put on, and the creatures get cool attacks. Each creature that you you get the DNA for, you can level up. They don't have their own skill trees. You have a human skill tree, and you get stuff like poison spit, or, you know, there's a lot of elemental aspects to co-ridden, so you can combine elements like you would in a Divinity Original Sin or Baldur's Gate 3. So, you know, you can freeze something and shatter it, or you can, you know, you can combine something that'll start burning, and, you know, that kind of elemental complementary attacks, electrocute something, all that stuff. And I had a moment where when I was playing this game, and I didn't really know that was going to happen. And I looted a like flaming spit thing, and I attached it to my to my monster for the first time. And I was like, oh, yes, it is so rad to be able to transform into a monster and have cool things and then swap them out on the fly. It's awesome. And this game has co-op. You play as a member of a family. There's four of them. They have different personality traits. You pick which one you want to play as. There's also character classes, but that aren't independent of the character you're playing. But you can hop on the back of somebody who's in their beast form. You can jump on their back and ride them. Co-ridden, you know, co-op riding. Co-ridden.
A new covert entry into the Mount Your Friends series.
That's right. That's right. So I can be riding around shooting arrows as somebody is attacking as a like dinosaur looking cool monster. It's really hugely fun. I am super into this game. The world is interesting. It is a combination, as I said, of sort of like dino, reptilian creatures that are all very differently designed. But also it's kind of got a futuristic thing. So you're in a sword and shield and bow and arrow type world, but they also have crazy sci-fi tech. Like there's an AI character that talks to you throughout it. You get these gauntlets that let you steal the DNA. So there's like high tech mixed with super low tech fantasy stuff. And it works. It works. This is a indie game. So some of the production value is not up to snuff with a AAA game. I think the voice acting is not great. I think some of the writing is a little bland, but the world is big and interesting. And, you know, you're going into cities and you can go to shops and buy and sell things. You're doing action RPG stuff and the world is cool. It looks really pretty. I think it's got this kind of bioluminescent stuff, glows like a kind of Avatar Pandora look to it that is really, I think, very attractive. I was not expecting much with co-ridden, got a code for it, checked it out. I think this game deserves way more attention. The combat is just really fun. And that central hook, that little loop of I'm shooting with my arrows, I'm slashing with my sword, I'm turning into a dinosaur, I'm spraying stuff out of my mouth, I'm whipping with my tail, I'm turning back into a human. That is really satisfying. Never gets old. You get surrounded by enemies as you would in a Diablo. You know, you're doing all kinds of cool stuff. And there's like little puzzles, how do I get there? Stuff hidden around the environment that you have to kind of figure out how you're going to get to it. Lots of great stuff in this game. And I haven't heard anybody else talk about co-ridden. I think it should be on more people's radar. Check this game out. Very cool. Another little hidden gem I got a code for is called iDune Frontline Survival. We talked a little bit about tower defense games with Orcs Must Die, Death Trap. This is a more traditional, well, that's not true. This is a tower defense game, but done very interestingly. But it is more of that top-down thing you would expect from a tower defense game. But iDune Frontline Survival imagines a tower defense mixed with a real-time strategy game. In fact, it's probably more real-time strategy than it is tower defense, although it has the trappings of tower defense.
And looking at the videos, at least what they have available on Steam, it looks very RTS. Like that's what jumps out at me. Well, what the RTS-ness of it.
You're defending, you know, I have a series of missions. It's got a whole story layer. It's got base building stuff akin to like an XCOM where, you know, between missions you can level up things and you've got this cool planet view where you can select which mission you're going to do. Lots of cool stuff that way. But the missions themselves are basically defend your places from an onslaught of aliens that are coming at you.
Looks like little bugs.
Yeah.
And you place down your turrets and your things, all the things that you can afford. They get shot from, you know, space and deployed like you would in a tower defense game. And you also have direct control over your hero characters who can attack and have all kinds of stuff on cooldowns as well. But the key difference here is that you can move your turrets. You can move your defenses anytime you want. Move them from here to there, no cost, no nothing. You could just move them. So it feels much more like an RTS where you're, oh, there's something happening over here on this side. Let's move all our defenses over here. Oh, no, they're attacking from the north now. Let's move. So you're doing a lot of micromanaging in addition to the fact that you're playing these hero characters and micromanaging them as well. So it has a lot of real RTS mechanics to it. The way I would describe iDune Frontline Survival is if you've ever played StarCraft or StarCraft II, the campaigns often have, especially when you're facing off against the Brood, you often have the end of a mission, the end of a big mission will be, you'll be, you know, dealing with bad guys. There'll be an end of the mission where it's like, okay, we're all coming at you. There's an onslaught. It's like, this is the crescendo of this story mission. They're all coming at you. There's going to be all these, I said Brood. I meant Zerg, right? Zerg, Brood. What's going on with my brain?
Halo on the brain.
Yeah, Halo on the brain. The Zerg, right? There's all these Zerglings that are going to be coming at you from every angle, and it's like, survive for 30 seconds to finish the mission. That's every mission of iDune, Frontline Survival. I mean, that's the beginning of the mission, too. Like, that's the crescendo of StarCraft missions is like the whole game here. It's just like you are overwhelmed from the word go, and you're micromanaging and moving things around. This game is not easy. You have to be on your game. I was failing missions a lot. It is ruthless. They're just like throwing thousands of bad guys at you all the time. But if you're into stuff like this, I think this is a really cool game. I like so much of how the mechanisms interoperate. The base building stuff, building up your stats and, you know, investing in certain things, and the push your luck, push pull of how long am I going to stay on this mission? I can extract another thing. I can do one more thing before we get out. All that stuff's really cool. The fighting and feeling like you're really taking on a massive, overwhelming onslaught of aliens is really fun. I think this game, you know, for folks that really are into that kind of stuff, you know, it's got some mobile game, you know, all those mobile games you get advertised that are like 40 million things attacking you at once. It's got some of that to it, but I think it looks really sharp. The writing is fun. There's cool characters. I think this is another hidden gem for me. iDune Frontline Survival.
There's a demo on Steam right now as well, if you wanted to check it out.
Yeah. So, you know, these were two big surprises for me this week.
Neato.
I have one more big surprise I want to talk about real quick, and it involves the VR. So let's jump into that. I have played what I would consider to be the first truly exceptional VR game of 2025. It's called Arkane Age. It is only available on PlayStation VR 2 or PC VR. I am playing it on PC VR, streaming to my my MetaQuest 3 wirelessly through the Steam Link app. And that works excellent. I have had no issues whatsoever. Some games, there will be issues with that functionality, unfortunately. Arkane Age, I've had zero issues. And I am playing with my formerly beefy GP, my 4090, which makes this game look gorgeous on my Quest 3.
Really? With a 4090?
I know.
You would still look good?
Hard to imagine. But
wow, yeah. A 40 series card? A 49?
It's garbage. It's actual garbage. But Arkane Age is a beautiful VR game. Gorgeous. This is a game where you play as an alien in an alien world. And every single aspect of this game is awesome. I think this game is a must-buy for anybody that loves VR games. Complete, out of nowhere, didn't know about this game a few weeks ago, wasn't on my radar at all. This is a must-play VR game. It's got really awesome combat, sword and shield stuff mixed with guns. So you are swapping, you got a sword on your hip, shield on your back. You've also got a pistol and another gun. All of the weapons have a huge amount of customization. You can find these upgrades, and you go to these stations and you customize them. They have tons of different mods and ways to change how they work. That part is really awesome. But dude, there's something so fun in VR of a bad guy rushing out at you, this alien that comes rushing at you, shooting, you raise your shield, you block its incoming blast, it leaps in the air with a sword strike, you raise your shield up, you literally could shoot it out of the air with your shotgun, it falls to the ground, you take your sword out and you come and finish it off that way. The mix of all that stuff, and it works so well, is really, really fun. But there's also an exploration layer. This game has the best climbing of any VR game. Ooh. I have played, guys.
Okay.
Climbing is, I find, always pretty darn fun in VR. In fact, there's climbing-only games like The Climb and The Climb 2 that are, I think, very fun in VR. This game does it even cooler because usually in those games, you grab your hands and climb up things, and I like that. Or you'll have to, pull something out of your inventory in order to be able to climb, whatever. This game has those, those things that mountain climbers use that are like hooks, thing. You have those all the time. And all you need to do is hold the grip buttons of your controller and flick your wrists up and they spring out. And so what you can do is you can leap into the air, flick your wrists, and then stab into a tree or something, and now you're climbing it. Like Lara Croft would do, It's awesome. It's awesome. And there's so much verticality to the levels where you are climbing things. You have to get up to this to find a thing or to do a thing or to get to a place. So you're using that all the time. And it is so satisfying. There's also swimming in this game, and the traversal is really, really well done. The combat is really well done. The environments are gorgeous. The bad guys are smart and challenging and interesting. The boss fights are crazy. Also, you have, this kind of tablet you can pull out that works as kind of a radar to find things, and you're doing that kind of stuff in this game. Every aspect of this game is cool. It's a real home run. Arkane Age. If you have a PSVR 2, I haven't tried it on PSVR 2, so I don't know specifically on that platform how well it works, but having played it on PC VR, streaming through my Quest 3, this is a contender for VR Game of the Year already, Arcane Age. Complete home run. Loved it.
They just put out a big patch on Wednesday as well that added a map to that tablet. So it's like a lot of quality of life features, it seemed like. So they're still updating and working on the game as well. But it looks like it came out in a pretty great state as is.
Christian, you should check this game out. It's so good. It's so good.
It's been on my wish list. I think I might have read about it in Edge or somewhere, but it's been on my wish list. I just haven't had time to dive back into it yet, into VR. But it looks
really
incredible.
Good.
The only thing for me, having not played it, that is a tiny like, I don't love the alien character design. Like,
oh, really?
Human being, the body that you inhabit in the game.
You have three fingers. It's really fun. You open and close your hands. Only three fingers. Yeah.
But it looks gorgeous. It looks gorgeous.
Yeah.
It looks really fluid in terms of movement as well, just like walking around.
Yeah. Yeah. I high quality on every level. Like the everything feels good. You know, that those climbing hooks is just one example, but everything feels like it was really well thought out for VR. I am doing so many different things in any given moment, but I never feel, you know, there's a lot of VR games where it's like, oh gosh, oh, they're coming at me. Okay, I gotta get in my menu and pull out the thing. Sometimes it feels very fiddly in VR to do anything. And this game is the exact opposite of that. I feel like whatever I want to do, kind of, you know, Batman did a great job of that as well. And I would say, Asgard's Wrath 2 does that as well. Very, very smartly, where gestures allow me to do exactly what I want to do in that given moment. And I'm never flummoxed. I'm never, feel like I'm fighting at the controls. I feel like this machine that's built to do this one thing right now. And if I think it, I can do it. Arcane Age does that very, very well. Okay. There you go. Real positive week for the stuff I played for me. I just loved everything. Yeah. And hey, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Jan Ochoa, oh man, it's always so fun to talk with you. Thanks for being here.
It's my pleasure to join y'all gentlemen here. I'm now inspired to hype up my energy for when I intro my shows and to make my mustache as bushy as Christian's.
Hey, well, it's yeah.
One can dream.
We can always dream.
It's a chia pet seeds. The secret is chia pet seeds.
You eat them or
you rub them on. You just kind of, you know, massage them in.
Jan, tell folks where they can keep up with you and all the cool stuff you do online.
If you head over to giantbomb.com, you can find all of our streams or podcasts over there. Just go to the YouTube Giant Bomb. I promise you will not wind up on any lists. You'll just find a bunch of hooligans playing games on the internet and chatting about them. I'm also on Blue Sky primarily these days, at janochoa.bsky.social. I haven't figured out how to buy a website to make it fun, make a fun handle yet, but one day we'll get there.
Isn't Grub like Grub WTF or something like that? Like, people are having fun with it.
Oh, yeah. I saw someone have fiveloco.com. I'm like, oh, okay.
That's awesome. Web 3.0. That's what we need is fun. You buy a website just to have a hip Blue Sky.
Yeah, totally. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
I am also on Blue Sky if you just search for Christian Spicer. This show is there as well as DLC Hype Train. I write a newsletter you can subscribe to for free over on Substack. It looks like Ghost is maybe the platform that I might be moving to as I try to find something other than Substack. But for the time, it is still on Substack. You can find it there, christianspicer.substack.com. The last newsletter went out last week, and it is about the idea of playing games as, quote, the developers intended, whether that's a Halo Combat Evolved, like this is the difficulty you're supposed to be playing at. And kind of, I guess the thesis is, I think that's more divisive than it is helpful when phrased like that, but it is a conversational newsletter. I always do my best to reply to everyone that replies to me. So you can find that again over on Substack and check that out. And then it took a little bit of the holiday break. There was a lull as we didn't have some episodes with video. Of course, patrons get full VODs as part of that, becoming a patron at any level. But we put up episode segments over on the @DLCPod YouTube page, just a small little community there. It's my little page, but I'm trying to be better about putting up episode segments every week about a specific game or something like that. So folks can find that over on the YouTube. Jeff, are you going skinny dipping as the weather warms up where you are? What are you doing this week?
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal, you know, as it always is. But my neighbors get upset.
Because it's their pool.
I don't have a pool. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I have other shows for you to check out, including the Film Cast, talking about movies and TV shows. We just had a very contentious episode about Presence, which is a movie I despised, but my co-host really loved. And this week, we're talking about a movie that I absolutely love that I think everyone should go see without knowing anything about it. And that is Companion. So check out the Film Cast wherever you get podcasts. Also, We Have Concerns, a comedy science show I do with Anthony Carboni. You can find that at wehaveconcerns.com. All right. Let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion.
Jan, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
Yeah, I have been on a big Twin Peaks kick and General David Lynch kick ever since his passing, RIP. And I found on archive.org, someone had uploaded what appears to be a Twin Peaks visual album that only got printed to Laserdisc and may only have been released in Japan.
Wow.
So they visit some locales that they used in the show, and it's just the soundtrack of the series played over that. It's funny because it's also it reminds me of the videos that would play in early karaoke places. and it's shot like that as well. So it's kind of calming. Still kind of makes gives like the creepy kookiness of Twin Peaks as you are enjoying the music and honoring the legacy that is David Lynch.
And you can get, where can you get this?
Someone had ripped the Laserdisc and it is all now on archive.org.
Wow. That's amazing. Twin Peaks. Did you just search for a Twin Peaks visual album?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. Very cool. What a find. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
Two things together that I have mentioned before in the past, but as I am hoping this is the year of Superman and hope and optimism in a lot of the media, and I'm very excited for James Gunn's Superman. If you are also looking to get in on that hope, optimism, hero, superhero journey, and you want to get ready for James Gunn's Superman this summer, there are two fantastic collections of Superman books you can buy. There are several, but the two I want to highlight again is All-Star Superman. You can spend $4 for a version of this, up to probably $100 for a big, huge premium. I mean, every version of the collection of All-Star Superman exists. It's a wonderful self-contained Superman story, technically an alternative timeline from the core version of the hero, but it is very much is this core representation of Superman. Fantastic, fantastic story, All-Star Superman. And the other one, you can also find various collections of it now, is Secret Identity, which is also a Superman book. Probably my favorite Superman book of all time. It takes a little bit more liberty with the idea of being an alternative take on who Superman is, but also very much plays into the idea of hope, optimism, and what it means to be a hero. So if you're looking to make 2025 the year of Superman, two great self-contained stories that I would recommend are All-Star Superman and Secret Identity.
Staying on the superhero tip, I want to recommend the new Disney Plus animated TV show, Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. I don't know if either of you have watched this yet. Two episodes are released as of this recording. This show is awesome. This show is awesome. It is really a different look at Peter Parker's origin story.
Is it the Tom Holland verse? Is it technically canonically connected, or it's its own thing?
It's its own thing. As far as I could tell, it's very different. To give you one example, you start the show and Uncle Ben is already dead. But Peter hasn't gotten any superpowers yet, which is pretty wild. That feels like the one core thing is that he failed to stop Uncle Ben's death.
Yeah.
Before, you know, because he was Spider-Man. Nope, not this show. It's really a different take. And the animation's awesome. It's got this really wonderful visual style that is different. It's not, you know, it's not Across the Spider-Verse look. It's got its own real kind of comic book thing going on. Clearly CG animated, but it really kind of a two-dimensional. It's beautiful. I think it's beautiful. So interesting, so different. Action's good. And it really, I think, leans into the title, which is Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, because it's kind of about the world around Spider-Man as much as it is about Peter Parker. It's about, we follow side characters. We learn about the neighborhood that he lives in a really interesting way. And it's really got some social commentary and beautifully subtle, fun, great show. Highly recommend Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man on Apple TV. Or excuse me, not Apple TV Plus, on Disney Plus. Disney Plus.
Exciting.
This is why I was confused. Originally, it was announced as Spider-Man Freshman Year, and it was leading up to the events of Civil War. And now I had lost track of it. It was rebooted, and it's like a multiverse version, but still has MCU things that are in it, but it's its own timeline. So, it's interesting.
The first episode has Doctor Strange in it, for example.
Oh, okay.
Very different. How Peter gets his powers is very different. The characters are really reimagined. It's really different. Really, really different. And I think it's a really cool Elseworlds kind of deal.
Really
neat take.
Cool.
I think you'll love it, Christian. It's great. It's great.
I have it to watch with the kids, and I got back from exercising, and they're like, Dad, we're already rewatching our three favorite episodes of Avatar. And I'm like, well, Jeff will be okay with that.
So. I approve. All right. We got a listener suggested parting gift. This comes to us from our friend Raj Diut, all the way from Australia. Raj writes in, I can't believe I forgot to mention this during the Life Hack paid DLC episode a few weeks back. So here it is as a parting gift for everyone to enjoy. Take everything out of your closet, turn all of your coat hangers around the wrong way. Why? Great question. Starting the next day, for each item you take out to wear, put that item back in the closet with the coat hanger around the correct way. Keep doing this throughout the year. Then come January 2026, I guess we're in February now, but whatever. A year from then, anything that hasn't been turned the right way is something you know you can definitely donate to someone more in need. If you don't have anything on hangers, you can turn items inside out and then turn them around the right way when they're worn and washed. I've done this for 2 years now, and you'll be surprised by how much of your closet you don't actually use. And there's no debate about keeping it or not. The hangers have spoken. I think that's a fun idea.
The last week of the year wearing like 8 layers. I've worn everything. Joey from Friends or whatever that episode was where he walks in.
This is a cool idea. I think my closet would not survive because I wear like 6 things out of my closet on repeat.
I got to start hanging everything now.
That's right. If you'd like to have your parting gift read on our show, send it to us, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Jan Ochoa and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. And you can always get merchandise for our show by heading to our store, which is store.dlcpod.com. Of course, our biggest thanks are always reserved for our patrons, patreon.com/DLC DLC pod is where you go to become one. It means a lot to us to get that support. Thank you, patrons. You are the best. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.